Offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of the Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai coming to you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. Today to join us for the Afternoon Satsang, we have someone who really doesn't need an introduction to our listeners, pretty much a part of our team. We have Brother Amai from the Center for Human Values. Sairam Amai.
Sairam Prem, Sairam everyone. Very happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us, and we are here to take up a topic which is very important. Maybe before introducing the topic, the reason why we took up the topic is because it is as relevant to me and Amai as it is to everyone. As I was telling Amai, you know, the first thought process was, is there a message of Swami which we can pick up, which most importantly needs to be followed by us?
True. Right? Yes.
So we are taking this topic in the sense that, not that we know we've mastered it and we are trying to tell you what it is about. We're hoping that even as we explore the topic, some sense gets driven into us.
Yeah, and obviously most of these satsangs are beneficial. We are the biggest beneficiaries of this, and we hope that it benefits us first of all, even before we kind of offer this to anyone else.
Right. So even before we tell you what the topic is, maybe I'll just play out the quote in Swami's own voice, because this is something that we've heard so many times from Swami and it is so important. So might as well have Swami introduce the topic for us. And this is what Swami says, and this is going to be the topic for this week's discussion.
Don't waste time. Time waste is life waste. Time is God. Don't waste time. Time waste is life waste. Time is God.
So there it is. And any number of times we've heard it from Swami. So that is the topic we thought we'll dwell upon. Don't waste time. Time waste is life waste. As we said, the reason why we thought we should take this up is, this is probably a topic that's applicable for all age groups, right? As students, Swami would tell us this, the more energy you have, the more distractions are possible. So I think that age group that Swami was addressing whenever Swami spoke to us as students was an age group where this is very relevant. You should not waste time. And Swami would also emphasize that this time particularly is more precious. When Swami would speak during the summer courses especially, Swami would say that don't waste time, especially this time, youth, because you have so much energy and so much idealism and positivity, don't waste this. But this topic is certainly applicable to all age groups, people belonging to all stages in life and all strata of society also.
Absolutely. In fact, it is one of the, when Swami talks about ceiling on desires, and a lot of people say that, oh, you know, is that not a little, like, it's not progressive, right, to have ceiling on desires. What Swami actually means by ceiling on desires is exactly those four important things not to waste. Right. So a ceiling on, so when the moment you waste time, you're not putting a ceiling on your desire, because you're just allowing the mind to go all over the place. So
right.
Don't waste time, don't waste food, don't waste energy, and don't waste money. That's pretty much how Swami defines ceiling on desire. So the bigger context of don't waste time would be, you know, or rather an allied topic would be ceiling on desires.
Right. And whenever Swami would speak about money and time, Swami would say, don't waste money. Waste of money is evil. Don't waste time. Time waste is life waste.
Yes, yes.
And that's how Swami would put it. Time waste is life waste. I think nothing can drive the importance of don't waste time better than that statement, right?
Yes. Because life is nothing but time.
Right. And I mean, you could splurge money and you could have, the hope of earning it multiple times.
Correct.
Later. But time is something that you can never earn again once.
Yes.
Having spent it. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so important. And I think we are also going through a period of time, again time, where this topic seems to be very important.
Yes.
Many, many people who are listeners and Swami's devotees, our own students, are working from home, right? And when you have different spaces for different activities, you have a home, you have an office that is separate, you have a playground that is separate, a school is separate, automatically that, I think that division of space takes care of division of time too.
Well. Yes.
Now when people are working from home, they don't know whether they're working too much or they're not working enough because that setup is so different. And in the process, I think before you realize, months have gone by because this entire period of the pandemic and the lockdown. One thing is we have not been able to do many things that we would have done otherwise. The other thing is time seems to be flying so fast. Suddenly you look at it, 1 year is gone. Right? Around this time, we were in the middle of a lockdown and we are still in it. It seemed like it was yesterday.
History repeats itself.
Yeah. Right. So clearly, there is some issue relating to time management, which is going all right.
That's, I completely agree with you. More so also because of, the technological growth that we have today. The stuff that is available to us at our fingertips is so much more. And I think, as they call it, in a signal, there is a bit of sound and there is a lot of noise. And I think those lines between sound and noise have blurred so much that we don't know how to take a decision on how to filter out sound or how to filter out a signal from all the noise that is there. So look at, for example, our avenues of entertainment today. It's virtually like everything at your fingertips, at your thumb tips, if we can call it that way. So whether it's television, whether it is the computer or our mobile phones, there's huge amount of data and information there, and it can be the easiest source of distraction and waste of time. I've done it myself. I'm probably the biggest victim of that, in the sense that you start seeing something else, then you get hooked onto something else, then you watch something else, and soon it's 1 hour is gone. And it often happens when, for me at least, I can give from my personal example, is I'm actually sacrificing my sleep time. When you actually should be going to bed and you want to give rest to your mind and brain, is when you're actually seeing something, watching something, and you end up, it so happens that you either it affects the next day, or you, means in both the ways it affects the next day, in the sense that you either wake up late or you wake up at the same time, but you haven't got your full quota of rest. So I think even in that sense, this particular time, the pandemic plus the technological, I was in fact reminded of something that Professor G.V., G. Venkatraman sir, had told us in one of our earliest awareness classes.
Okay.
He mentioned that, why do you think, terrorism or terrorism in its worst form, or even something like trolling, of course, trolling was not there that time, but, a whole lot of people having so much to say on all of these platforms, come to think about it, right? Twitter. All the time people are, somebody put something, 550,000 comments are there, so all of this time, why is it the way it is today? And if you notice, these are people who are their most productive. These are not people, these are not retired people, these are not too small children, these are the most productive part of the population of the country, which is involved in these kind of things. Whether it is, the example he gave was, look at the terrorists. They are educated, highly educated in most cases, very young, very skilled, and they are the people who are causing all of this problem. Why? He asked this question to us. And obviously, his analysis kind of was very beautiful, because he said, if you look at what technology has done today for us, is what we needed, let's say, 10 hours to do, today we are able to do it in 1 hour.
Exactly.
Right? So if building something or doing some work, searching for something, if it required 10 hours to do, today we are able to crunch that, compress that, and do it in 1 hour. So he says, while technology has helped us to crunch 10 hours into 1 hour, it has not told us what we can do with the remaining 9 hours.
Beautiful.
And that is where we are wasting time, or potentially dangerously using that time to harm somebody else. So, and I think today his words kind of make so much more sense, that I'm able to do everything so fast, I don't know what else to do with that time. I end up being on Twitter, wasting my time, trolling someone, or reading somebody else's trolls, all of that, Instagram and all of that. You actually wonder, was that a productive time? What did I do with that time?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the thought about all these different kind of social media and OTT came when there was somebody was speaking. Of course, he was speaking from the point of view of money making, but what he was saying made a lot of sense. He said, you know, you see an offer which says that you can get a subscription for this OTT platform. It's just 299 rupees per month. Or it just says, oh, it's an annual subscription plan which will save you 40% or something like that.
Yeah.
And you say, oh, that's a steal. That's a wonderful deal. And then you take it. You might be paying 299 or 400 or whatever it is. But what about the time that you spend in that platform? Right? You start watching a series and you see that for a few hours every day. Right, binge watching, or even if you say you spend only an hour every day and you see it over the month, what about the cost of that time that you've spent?
True.
Right? And you're saying that that time can be used for money making. I mean, though we don't agree completely with that thing, but that time which is taken away, which we think we've spent only 300 rupees, but we're spending much, much more than that money worth of that subscription, because we are spending something that we can never recover.
Yeah.
Right? That period of time. And being partially in social media, you know, part of activities in the media center involves using social media and,
true,
you know, study how the algorithms work and all of that. If you look at it, who gains by you getting stuck in a platform like that is not you.
Definitely not us.
Definitely not us, exactly. Right? And every algorithm works like that. If you go on to any of these video hosting softwares, the more they are able to retain your eyeballs, literally, you know, they see time in how many minutes of eyeballs of the viewer you can get.
Correct.
That much they earn in revenues in advertisement and all of that.
Yep.
Right? So all of the content is prepared in such a manner that you get trapped in that.
Yeah.
Right?
So it massages your instincts and your impulses.
Exactly.
And so you feel very comfortable, you know, throughout the whole process. It's like going to a spa, but a mind spa.
Absolutely.
Kind of a thing, yes.
Right. So when everything has been created in that manner, you're walking into a maze which is made to trap you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you need to evoke something that is higher than just that mental impulses.
And I think it's exactly for that reason that Swami set up the Satya Sai organization.
Right.
Is to, you know what, I'll give you another spa. But this is a spa that will massage your mind in a way that it'll progress rather than be, you know, kind of stagnant, right?
Right.
And unfortunately, or by divine design, in this lockdown period, even that is not available. Or, of course, people may say that, yeah, I do attend online bhajans. And today I attend far more online talks. There's one talk, I think, going on every single day somewhere in the Sai world. But Swami created that. And then he also created avenues for us to kind of involve ourselves, whether it was in Nama Sankirtana, or whether it's in Seva activities, or whether it was in study circles. And today, we don't have that option. And I think that puts added pressure on us to motivate ourselves. You know, I'm sure you'll agree with me. Back in the day, maybe 1 year back, you know, when we had a Thursday evening bhajan or a Sunday evening bhajan, nearly an hour before that, you started preparing for it. You went for the bhajan, you sat there. Today, either we don't have bhajans, or we have something like an online bhajan where I don't have to prepare myself. Just log in, and you know, it's become another OTT. It's become another kind of entertainment for the mind. So I think today, don't waste time is more relevant than probably ever before.
Exactly. You know, if you look at what the Satya Sai organization or any setup like that, the samitis, the centers, or for us, the idea of going and sitting for bhajans, right? I mean, you're a bhajan singer, but for us, that to be allowed to come inside the mandir and sit for bhajans, that became a very important part of our daily discipline, right?
Discipline,
apart,
yes.
From the fact that we enjoyed it, sitting in taking Swami's name, it becomes an important part of our day's schedule, day's discipline. So it's typically like, why do you sign up for a gym or a gym trainer?
Yep.
It's because you are giving the control outside. because you realize that the internal control seems to be not working too well. You're giving it outside.
Yes.
But the fact is, at some point, you have to look at this entire setup and say that, okay, this is how it was meant to work. And at some point, you have to mimic that or make that work for yourself.
Correct. I remember, Prem, our warden, Dr. Shiv Shankar Sai sir, and Dr. Rangarajan sir, when they were the senior teachers in our hostel.
Right, right.
If you remember, our hostel life was, you know, we used to call it, a life in the hostel is an interval between two bells.
The first bell and second bell.
Right? The first bell, second bell. And it was like, it had become so much a part of, the gongs had become so much a part of our life that, you know, if we could grab an extra 5 minutes between the first bell and the second bell, we would do that.
Right.
And a whole lot of, you know, events happened between the first bell and the second bell. And I remember both of them telling that the whole purpose of having the bell outside you is so that at some point of time, there will be a bell ringing inside you long after you have passed out from the portals of this university.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, even now when I think about it, it makes such a lot of sense that, yeah, if I made those bells, if I followed those bells outside of me, it was so that long after I passed out from the portals of the university or the hostel, there would be a bell which was inside of me, which was ringing, saying, now is the time to do this, now is the time to do that.
I mean, in many ways, that's what we are doing. You know, when we look at the hostel schedule itself, we did not give much thought when we were going through it.
Yep.
Right. Now, when we look back and we see that, okay, what was that balance it brought to life? And now we are trying to recreate that entire schedule in our own way. We're not probably exactly watertight in that sense. But we are trying to find that same balance in our own way. I think that's precisely what we have to do at some point.
Yes.
Whether there is a lockdown or not, or a pandemic or not, whether you're regularly going to the center or not, at some point, we'll have to look at that system and say that, okay, this is what it was meant to do. And am I able to consciously do that in my life every day? And it's very, very important for the fact, when you look at time itself, why is it important to do that now?
Yeah.
Or as I said from that, you know, the video which I was saying about the time is available, use it for money. That is one way of looking at it. But the way we have to look at it has to be a little different, because money making is not necessarily the best way of using time.
Oh, definitely not. In fact, I mean, come to think about it, money is a medium, right? It's not an end. It's a means to a larger end. And I think defining that end for ourselves is probably what, and this is what we were discussing also. Strangely, this human species is the only species that has cognizance of death. That is what they say. While all species definitely has, you know, bhaya, that mithuna, the four things that everybody has, all animals have. You know, the four fears that we have.
Right.
Mrityu is definitely the fear of death is there, but the knowledge of death is not there. No animal has the knowledge of death except human species. And they say that the very fact that we have knowledge of this death is what gives rise to what is called as foresight, which is our ability to plan out. Right. If we did not know death, if we did not understand death, we would just live day to day just like any other animal. And oftentimes when we see these beautiful documentaries of animals on, you know, on National Geography or Discovery or some of these channels, you find, you know, for example, when a lion kills or, you know, cheetah kills, it kills for that moment. It doesn't say that, hey, you know, maybe day after tomorrow I may not get this herd, so let me kill for 5 days later. It never happens like that. So much so that once it's full, they are all kind of, they live together, you know, nothing happens. You know, I was just watching that.
Mm.
Why? Because they live, in that sense, they live only for today, and they're not able to plan out. Now, having given this ability to us, right, that we know that there is a death, there's a certainty of death. There's probably no other certainty as certain as that death. Right? And so what do we do with what is left, no, of us? And I think that is where this saying that don't waste time, because you don't have infinite of that. You know, you don't have that infinitely to your spending. If probably we lived infinitely, yeah, we could afford to spend 1 hour, 2 hours, 1 day, 2 days, because yeah, I'm going to be here forever. Mm-hmm. But because we are not here forever, we need to now, that's why, you know, what Swami says, time waste is life waste.
Mm.
It becomes more important.
Yeah, it is that conversation between Yudhishthira and the Yaksha goes.
Yes.
What is the most fascinating, interesting thing? He says that
yes.
You know, every being dies. And you see that every day, but every being lives as though there is no death.
Yeah.
Right?
And I don't want to be a bummer in that sense, but especially what we all went through in the last 2 months. Right, in what could be described as the worst possible time in our lives, to see so much of like shocking events happening around us in India, that is what we mean with the second wave that happened. We literally saw that happening. You know, some of our brothers who work in the super specialty hospital were telling that things were taking, you know, turn in hours.
Right.
A person was coming in absolutely fine. You know, and 2 hours later, 1 hour later, suddenly, you know, his vitals start to collapse. And you literally see the ephemerality of life in front of you. You know, we were discussing this. We lost one of our very dear professors, very dear sirs, somebody who had served Swami for so long in the Vrindavan campus, Sri Ruchir Desai sir. And, you know, it came as a shock to all of us. How could this happen?
Right.
And it literally shook up a lot of the alumni around the world as to what are we doing with our lives. It was a wake-up call. It was one of those bells, you know, Swami was ringing so hard to say that, brothers, look at this. If this could happen to him, who led a very, very, structured life
and
disciplined life and everything, if that could happen to him, what about you? Are you doing that? What are you doing, you know, to prepare for that? So, you know,
I mean, exactly, when you see someone having lived a full life and then you see the end coming, it doesn't shock you so much.
Yeah.
Right? When suddenly things happen,
somebody snatched away,
right? And it's so true. There are so many people whom we are talking about and you say, no, haven't you heard that person? Or minutes. You don't even expect that someone whom you spoke to a couple of weeks ago or a month ago. And in Parthi, it is like even if you met them a year ago, it felt like it was yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
And you know, suddenly you hear that person's no more. It,
yeah.
Somebody put it, you know, it's like that sand clock, right? When you turn a sand clock, you see the sand spilling out and you see how much is left. Imagine the top of the sand clock is covered. You don't know how much sand is left.
Yep.
Right? And that's precisely our life. You know, we really don't know how much sand is left and the sands of time are running out. And what needs to be done is, I mean, imagine any planning that you do is based on an end date, right? You know that this is the date.
Expiry date.
Right. You say that I have to deliver by this date. You have a project deadline.
Correct.
But here you are planning for something without a project deadline, right?
Yeah.
Which is a floating deadline.
Everything that we consume.
Exactly.
All the food that we always look at this expiry date and we have to consume it before that.
Or even if you have a jar, you know that, okay, this many spoons of it is left and
left.
I'll accordingly plan by.
What about this life?
Right. You don't know how much is left in the jar.
We don't know how much is left, yes. No, as Swami very beautifully gives that example in his discourses, which is every time before a photograph is taken, the cameraman says smile and then he takes the photograph. Right. But the ultimate photographer, which is death, is not going to even give you that
right.
much time
right.
to say smile and then click your photo. It's going to be that instantaneous.
Right. And typically, like the example that we always give, that of Parikshit, right? Where he is given this curse which says that you're going to die after 7 days. We say it's a curse, but actually he was said that your life for the next 7 days is guaranteed.
At least.
Right? So he knew that he had 7 days of life. And Swami would say he at least knew that. What about you?
Correct.
You don't know. And that's the reason why to take the reason I was saying that everything in this world, it's not merely the OTT platforms or social media that is made in such a way. The world is called samsara for that, right? I was just looking up the meaning of the word samsara, or the root of where it comes from. So samsarati means to be listless.
Listless.
Right. Mm-hmm. To just go without any purpose, roaming around without purpose. Right. So that's why it's called samsara, because the moment you're in it, you just get absorbed into it, just like any of those, social media platforms you're talking about. That is the nature of this world. That's why you have to evoke something that is higher than this. That's why Swami speaks of buddhi, right? You take control of your life, and then you say, this is the direction in which I want it to go. Yep. And you plan it accordingly. Right? That's why it's more important, and it's all the more important in this lifetime. You know, when you talk about human beings being aware of death, that's what makes human life important.
Yep.
Because you have the awareness of death. Right?
Correct.
What about you and me as Swami's devotees?
Yeah.
Heightened awareness.
Absolutely. And that's why we were saying that first is just being human. Then, you know, being an educated human being.
Right.
And then being a human being who has had an opportunity to enter into the spiritual life.
Right.
To have a guru, an unmatched guru, probably the likes of which rarely walk on this earth. And I often ask myself this question. Who is, you know, a lot of the students who join now in the university, mm-hmm. they, mm-hmm. after every Paranam session, this is one thing that they always say, oh, brother, you're so lucky. You could live with Swami. You know, you lived in a time, once mm-hmm. again, mm-hmm. which was with Swami. And every time they say this to me, you know, and I remember in the years 2012, 13, 14, you know, these were the years where some of those students who joined had just missed Swami. You know, and so that anguish and anxiety was so much more in them. They literally used to have tears in their eyes when they used to hear a Paranam session. Like, Swami, why so late, Swami? Why so late? And seeing that reaction, one of the things that used to come in my mind is, you know what? I have no excuse. Because that generation of students and that generation of people who are going to come now are going to look at me and said, you know what? You had the golden opportunity to live with Swami. What did you do? At least, you know, the generations that come after us, they can probably excuse themselves saying, you know what? You guys were lucky. We were not lucky. We never had the physical proximity. So all of us who lived in that lifetime along with God, we have that additional responsibility, and kind of hits me more and more, you know, like when I see students joining today, and I wonder, you know, and they also feel, you know, oh, you know, they're just going through the same bells that we went through. But the circumstance under which we went through those bells and the circumstances under which they are going through those bells are entirely different. No, so we should, those contemporaries of Swami have a much, much higher responsibility.
I was once talking to a group of devotees, most of them much senior to me, and most of them who have come to Swami much, much before I had the opportunity to have Swami's darshan. So I was asking them, how many of you have seen Swami? Of course, all of them put up their hand. So I said, can you point out any achievement in the world which you can say is greater than the fact that you've seen God?
Mm.
You become the president of the country. You know, you become the most powerful person in the world. Can you think of anything? The most richest person, the most famous person. Can you take any worldly achievement and say that this is greater than the fact that I saw God walking on earth? So, which means you have no excuse. Your goal has to be spiritual.
Yes.
Right? Because anything that is worldly is does not stand water behind, you know, with this fact that you've seen Swami. So, your goal has to be spiritual.
Yes. Yes.
But that's not merely only for, people who have seen Swami. That's why that awareness. There are 100,000 people who have seen Swami. Not everyone are with that awareness of the opportunity that they got, right?
Yep.
I was once speaking to this very elderly devotee who came to Swami in the late 50s or 60s maybe. He came to Swami as a very successful businessman with a huge business. I mean, in the 60s, he had a multinational, so to say.
Wow.
Right? You can imagine the amount of wealth that he had in his command. So one fine day, Swami called him and Swami said, see, there are some karmas of your past that you have to live through. And one of that means that you're going to be brought down to the streets.
Oh.
You're going to lose all your wealth, right, that has been passed on to you and what you have also earned.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami said, do you trust me? I'm going to put you through this. Will you hold on to me? Do you trust me? He said, Swami, certainly. Do whatever it takes.
There's only you. I can only hold on to you.
Right. And I trust you. And I'm... So Swami is literally giving him the conscious idea that what you're going to go through now, however difficult it may be, it is me putting you through that. Right. And Swami gave him that idea. And as Swami would, the toughest thing for a devotee is not going through that. The toughest thing for a devotee is when Swami physically starts withdrawing when you're going through that.
Correct.
Right. And that's also something that happened. Right. Slowly, the devotee who had such access to Swami slowly started losing that access to Swami. But the good thing for him was he was made aware that this is what you're going to go through. So apparently at one point, Swami had called him for an interview. Those are the times when the interviews were becoming scarce, but he was still getting the audience. And in Swami's presence were some of the senior devotees who had seen his best days. And, one of the devotees said, Swami, why are you putting him through this? He said he was such a wealthy person. He's going through all this. Swami, why don't you help him? Why don't you do something so that he doesn't have to suffer so much? Because it had come to a point where he had lost everything, right? He had lost his home and, literally on the streets. Then Swami looked at this devotee and Swami, the devotee was complaining on his behalf. What is your problem? Like, why are you saying? Then Swami said, if he says, I will do something about it. Then they all looked at him and they said, pray to Swami.
This is the time.
This is the time. And then Swami looked at him and said, do you want me to do something about it? He said, no, Swami. Then Swami, gave him an offer. Do you want me to put away this poverty to the next birth? If you want, I can do that. Swami said, if you want, you tell me. I will lessen your burden. I will put away this suffering to the next birth. And he said, no, Swami, that's definitely not what I want. And everybody was a bit surprised. He said, no, Swami, I don't want that. Because it is far better to go through whatever pain or whatever has to be suffered with the awareness that you are beside me and it is for a purpose than to go through it in a lifetime when I'm totally listless and I don't know what it is. He said, I might as well undergo it now, right? Because that whether you are suffering or whether you are struggling or whether you're going towards something, be it moksha or be it a higher spiritual state, with awareness, right? So when we say that we are Swami's devotees, this awareness of God, right? It's such a precious blessing and that makes time so much more precious.
Yes.
Because we don't know. We are aware of Him now. We don't know tomorrow whether we'll be aware of Swami, right?
Yeah.
The memory could be taken away from us. You never know, right?
In fact, Dr. John Hislop's final days are very similar to that.
Right.
Where, he had literally trained himself day and night, 24/7, to constantly chant Swami's name, right? And towards the end of his life, when one by one the senses started to be taken away from him, Swami had sent Dr. Samuel Sandweiss to spend some time in Santa Barbara where Dr. John Hislop was. And so every time Mr. Samuel Sandweiss would go there, he would say, John, how are you? And John would kind of, say, Swami has taken away my hearing. And Swami is taking away my eyesight.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami is taking my ability to move. And so one by one, all of these were to be taken away. And he says, but I'm still happy because the mind is still chanting the Lord's name. And towards just a few days before his passing away, when one of the last, I think the last visit that Dr. Samuel Sandweiss had with Dr. John Hislop, he says, why are you looking a little tense today? He says, because even the name is now being taken, even memory of the name is being taken away from me. And that is what I'm scared of. So literally Swami took him through that, the final moments. And imagine if someone like Dr. John Hislop, who had trained himself all life long, also found it that much more challenging. Imagine then what is our state and where, how fast we need to kind of
absolutely
push ourselves.
Right. So just reiterating all that, time is valuable for whoever it is. Right?
Strangely, if you look at the word time in Sanskrit, it is kala.
Right.
And kala means both things. It means time and death.
Death also.
So right. It's almost like it is synonymous. Don't waste time is don't waste life. because it's going to end at some point of time. Because
Swami says there is only one certainty in life.
Yes.
Every being that is born is only certain of death. Everything else in between can be changed by grace and by everything. But the only thing that is certain in life is that. So in that sense, time is valuable for everyone, whoever it is.
Absolutely.
It becomes more valuable in this human life because of the awareness of what is there. And it becomes so much more valuable when you bring Swami into the picture. And all our listeners, you know, when we're talking to whoever is listening because Swami has brought in himself into the life. And at least a certain bit of sensitivity as to what this life is meant for has been given to us. As Swami would say, you know, the whole purpose of life is to understand that you should not be born again.
Yep.
Whether we have absorbed that message or not, I don't know how much we've absorbed it, but at least we've been made aware that, you know, that is the end. That is what we are supposed to work towards. It becomes all the more important how we spend time.
So that was a fairly long justification of why this topic was taken.
Was taken and why we feel it's something that... because many times at the end of the day, as you said, you know, when you've spent time doing something which is absorbing but not purposeful, when you look back and say that, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
Right? There are many days when you end the day with, oh God, have I spent this day...
Oftentimes, you know, I feel about our birthdays like that. Right. When people celebrate it, you're actually 1 year closer and you wonder, oh my God, 1 year is over.
Right.
You know, and so what have I achieved? And oftentimes, something that I do with myself is, I try to benchmark myself against the likes of, you know, have always Swami would say, you know, aim high, aim really high. So, you know, a kind of benchmark ourselves with myself, with the likes of Shankaracharya, Jesus Christ, you know, Swami Vivekananda. These were like people who left very early in their physical sojourn. In that sense, one was 32, one was 39, one was 36. And I remember during those birthdays, Jnaneshwara, for example, the great saint Jnaneshwara, 21. You know, and they had finished. They had done monumental amount of work. They had realized themselves by that time. And so every birthday, you know, I'm kind of, oh God, Shankaracharya is gone. Like Shankaracharya's life is gone. Jesus Christ's life is gone and I'm still around and what have I done? What have we achieved? I remember, in fact, one of the very senior brothers who had the opportunity to serve Swami, he was once sharing that if ever you think you want to benchmark yourself or you ever think, you know, I think you've been there, done that, you want to ever, you know, find out what is your worth, try reading a discourse of Swami when he was of your age, you know. So if I'm, let's say 35, so when Swami was 35, which would be, I think, 1955, what discourse he gave at that time, read that. And you will straight away know what is the gap that you need to go, because the level at which a 35-year-old Swami was talking and you at the age of 35, what are your thoughts? So I think that's also a very good, useful benchmark for a lot of people, you know, to kind of know how much more we need to traverse.
Right. And that's the reason why this topic is really important. Maybe we'll take a quick break at this point and we'll break this topic after that and see, you know, what do we really mean by time? What do we mean by, instead of seeing waste of time, what is the proper use of time? I think that's probably a more constructive approach to the thing.
Yeah.
But I think we'll take a short break, dear listeners. Don't go away. On the other side of it, we will dwell deeper into this subject.
Shri Lakshmi Ramana Narayana.
Narayana Veda Parayana
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were having a discussion on this very important and lucid quote of Swami, "Don't waste time, time waste is life waste." After that introduction, you know, when you really have to look at this topic, we'll have to first understand what is time. When you talk of time, what is really that time, and how are we wasting it, and how not to waste it, or how to make the right use of that? So I think that is the first thing. What? How do we really understand time? I think it's a topic on its own. Cannot be spoken. A good part of physicists are breaking their heads on that concept.
Absolutely.
Right? I think what is time?
It is probably one of the burning questions today for science.
Right.
And in a sense, if you look at time as a building block of the universe, because how do you define time is every, if you look at science, it will go back to the beginning of the cosmos. So the moment there was the so-called Big Bang, that is what gave rise to, time. The time starts from there. So some people call it 13.7 billion years or 14.4 billion years. And from there, time kind of starts. So in that sense, time and space, they say, is the building block of the universe.
Right.
But if you look at it from an individual point perspective, from our perspective, my time started from the time this body was born, from the womb of my mother.
Right.
Right. So my time started 30, 40 years back. And so there are these two times. I think one is, we can call it the absolute time, and one is the relative time. Right. Time being relative and time being absolute. This is how I'm able to first think about it. Once we start reading Swami's literature, both these absolute and relative time are actually products of consciousness. That is, the awareness of time is what, even I think yesterday also when we were discussing on this topic, we said in deep sleep, time kind of stands still.
Right.
So sometimes we sleep for 5 minutes, but we feel that we have slept for hours together. Okay, and sometimes we sleep for hours together and we feel like we have slept only for 5 minutes.
Right.
So, you know, the relativity of time versus its absoluteness is actually the product of awareness or consciousness. So I think the spiritual way of looking at time and space is time and space itself is a product of consciousness. So consciousness is the fundamental building block and time and space, you know, are products of that. So much so that we actually, when we are trying to define how big the universe is, we even the term, if you see used, is light years.
Mm-hmm.
So there is the element of time even in the dimension of the universe.
Right. Now, going back to that idea of creation itself, you know, when you speak about Brahman, all our Upanishads and scriptures give a description that the whole definition of Brahman is it is limitless. So yes. When you say it is limitless, it is, Swami would say, anadi ananta. It does not have a beginning, it does not have an end.
Yes.
So something which does not have a beginning and an end, if you look at it, you can look at it from the point of view of space or an object which starts at one point and stops at one point. So there is no start and stop as an object if you look at Brahman, which means there's nothing other than that, right? That's what they say, because there is no space left for anything else.
Correct.
If something does not have a beginning and an end, there is no space left for anything else. If you look at it from the point of duration, then there is again no beginning and an end.
Yeah.
Right? Ananta is that. There is no birth and there is no death to that thing. So the whole idea of creation is nothing but the creation of the concept of limitedness. Illusion of limitedness, if you can say.
Right.
So, the Purusha Suktam and all of these great scriptures say that Brahman decided to create, and the first object that was created was this delusion, Maya.
Yeah.
And from Maya comes time and space. The idea that something starts and something ends.
Yeah.
Or something can be only here and cannot be there. And it is in that Maya all of us are trapped, saying that, I am here, I am not there. Or as you said, the awareness that my life has started, my life is going to end, that whole idea of body consciousness and everything comes. But then that idea of time within the mind, when we talk about don't waste time, we are actually referring to that time.
Yep. Yes. Right? And there is consciousness plus Maya, if you can call it.
Right. We are in that thing, right? Because if we don't define that, when we are saying don't waste time, we are referring to this time. That time cannot be wasted. Something which is endless, how can you ration it out?
Yeah, right? That is. I think, as one of our sirs would say, activities to become realized and activities after becoming realized. for example, the realized soul, a realized master, is beyond time and space.
Right.
For them, it's that they like Bhagwan, for example. No, so oftentimes when I remember. Swami would come and sit outside and, he will, what was called as a chit-chat, it would be nothing very specific, nothing very spiritual, we can't label this. For example, Swami will come and say, how many idlis you had and what should be the size of idli and how idli is made. Okay, and Swami would spend maybe half an hour discussing about chutneys, and which chutney he had when he was small. And one tendency that we as idiots who sat there was, Swami, why are you spending time in this? How has this got to do with our spiritual growth and all of that?
So, at least if it is directed to us, then we might discount.
Yes. But we have to understand that activities that happen at that level are beyond time and space, because for them time and space don't matter. So I like this, this differentiation between activities to get realized and activities that you do after realization. And so since we are not realized yet, definitely time is very crucial, and it definitely is what defines us at the moment. Of course, once we have reached that level, then we are at Swami's level, we don't have to worry about
it. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that is the whole goal, when you say the mind's cognition of time. So we are in a point where we believe, I mean, the moment you ask someone, what is your age? We give the age of the body.
Yeah.
Which means that is the consciousness we are in, right? And not only about answering our age in that sense, all our planning is based on that, right?
Yes.
I was reading a scientific study where they say that the mind always thinks from the point of view of the age of the body. And the society trains you to behave like that.
Yep.
You know, a 60-year-old person behaving like a 16-year-old is not...
It's a disease.
Right?
It's a disease.
It's a disease and it's a very immature thing to do.
Yeah.
Similarly, you don't want a 10-year-old to speak like somebody who's 50 or 55. You'll be given a spank and say, behave your age.
Behavior, yeah.
Right? Because we are made in such a way that the mind thinks that the body's age is my age. And there is relevance in that. There is importance in that. And the whole idea of how to use time, I think, will be based on the fact or the acknowledgement that there is a concept of time in my mind, in my consciousness, in my awareness. And that is where we start from. And the idea is how to utilize this time in such a way that you get to that state where time and space does not bind you.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
I think that is the whole journey.
The
in that
concept
sense.
Of time, yeah. I was just reminded of the relativity of time. Sometimes I remember some of our friends, this came to my mind just now, which was some of our brothers had gone inside for an interview with Swami, you know, and we were sitting outside. And so the amount of the length of the interview was the same, right? Mm-hmm. There were a bunch of brothers who were inside the interview room. There were a bunch of brothers outside. And we felt that this time was not getting over. Mm. we are able to hear peals of laughter coming from inside and jokes and yes, Swami, and no, Swami, no, Swami. And that is going on. And this is not ending. And so, we are like, what is this? 40 minutes Swami is spending with them. And when we met in the hostel, those brothers he didn't know how 40 minutes got over here. You know, and it kind of hit me at that time that the relativity of time, it was the exact same 40 minutes as one set of people were thinking 40 minutes like 40 hours. And for another set of people, the 40 minutes were like 40 seconds, you know, that. So it is the quality of time and not time per se. It's what are you spending that time in that kind of defines. And I think that is something that is very important for us to keep in mind as we have this discussion, which is the quality of time that you're spending in kind of defines who you are. Not just, you know, as they say, don't tell me the years that you have spent, but the life that you put into the years, yes, not the years that you put into the life. Right. Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about Swami distorting time. That's quite obvious. But you find that even when you speak sometimes, you know, when you come together, do a program together, you feel that you have spoken for 5 minutes. Everybody else feels that, why is he going on and on?
Yeah. And I really hope that this satsang is not like that.
Really. But it's very true. You know, there is, again, the idea of money, if you look at it. One way of looking at money or wealth is how you're able to store time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, money is nothing but a potential form of
time.
Time, right? The whole idea of how money was conceived was that when the barter system was there, let's say I have tomatoes and I'm giving you tomatoes and I'm buying grains from you. If I could convert this perishable commodity into something that I can store, and then I can transact it whenever I want.
Right? Yeah.
That is one of the reasons why money was conceived or civilization came up with this idea of money. I do effort over a period of time and I can store it in a form which I can use later, right?
Yes.
So money, if you really look at it, is a potential form of time. And that is why they say that, you know, how can you use this time in such a way that it can be stored? So that is why money is given that importance. But if you look at this point that we just discussed, that the use of time is best when if you're able to use it in such a manner that you transcend time itself. Which means within this fixed period of time, there is an opportunity to bring infinity into that. If it really makes sense, right? We can make every minute count in such a way that if this leads to that timelessness, or that, you want to call it liberation, want to call it mukti or realization or whatever it is. That's what it is. It's a state of timelessness. So within this limited time, you have this opportunity or enormous opportunity of going towards timelessness. And that is what, whenever you talk of an enormous opportunity, that is what you miss out if you don't go after it.
Yes.
Right? So I think that is why it is very important. And the moment you speak about, time within our thinking, when you say about age, when you say about the age of the body, that begins to define how you use that time, right? As Swami would often say, you are at a point, what action are you going to do? That is defined by, as Swami would very beautifully say, desha kala paristhiti.
Correct. Right? Time, space and circumstance.
Right. Where you are, what is that time, which includes your age, the status and everything, right? The time. When Swami says kala, it means everything. You might be a 5-year-old, but if you are, in the hospital needing immediate thing, that circumstance defines that time, right? You cannot treat that 5-year-old like any other 5-year-old.
Yeah.
The way you treat that person is completely different. So, desha kala paristhiti is like the three dimensions that define what act has to be done.
I think these three are absolutely crucial in this transactional world, right? With what we call as vyavaharika jivana.
Right.
In this transactional life, these three pretty much define what we are supposed to do, how to utilize time. And I think I would just like to bring in one more point over here, which is an important point for we Sai devotees. Oftentimes we hear that, we Sai devotees that an unconscious bifurcation of what is my spiritual life versus what is my worldly life.
Right.
Like, a lot of people say, so what, you want me to sanctify every moment of my life, every desha kala, I should do namasmarana all the time, or should I be always thinking of the absolute? No, it's not possible. Or I should be doing pujas always. I can't do that. And I think what Swami is basically telling us to do is, the moment you're able to convert that work into worship, very simple, or consider your duty as God, these two things, any desha, any kala and any paristhiti can give you and gives you an opportunity to sanctify it. So you don't have to wait for a particular, this is what even we were discussing as we were preparing for this, right? That the whole purpose of establishing the mission, the Satya Sai organization, the Central Trust, all of these institutions, was to help us translate what we were learning here into our day-to-day life.
Right.
So whether we are householders, whether we are students, whether we are parents, whether we are professionals, the whole idea is, how can I translate what I'm learning in the organization and sanctify my rest of my life? If I'm going to bifurcate, that this is my worldly time and therefore I can do whatever I want, be whatever I want. And then I come to the typical Sunday churches. Sin all week long. Because that you can go confess on Sunday and, wipe your slate clean for the new week. That definitely is not, the proper usage of time. Right? The moment we bifurcate between spiritual life and worldly life, we are kind of losing the plot. We are losing the game there. I think in that sense also, so desha kala paristhiti, what to do? And yet there is one thing which is common, which is, if I'm able to every desha, every kala and every paristhiti, sarva karma bhagavat prityartham. If I'm able to add this formula into every time, space and circumstance of whatever I do in that circumstance, Swami, I'm offering it to you.
Right.
I think that's one way in which we can utilize
time. It's a very, very important point that you make, because from what we started off with, you have the framework of the organization, or for that matter, our students. So much of our integral education system depends on that boarding aspect of Swami's education institutions, right? And as I was telling somebody the other day, even Satya Sai Institute is offering distance education now. It was quite unthinkable some time back, because the entire framework depends on that living from bell to bell. Now, having removed that, so it is very
important. Those bells have to move inside.
Right. So it's very important. It's not merely the fragmentation and the segmentation of time,
yeah,
But there is something else that happens in that system that also has to be brought in. I was once talking to a group of devotees, and one Balvika's teacher asked me this. There was a very unfortunate event that had happened in her Balvika's class. One of the brightest Balvika students, whom she was very fond of and all the other children were very fond of, had some ailment and he passed away. Right? So she was very disturbed. She said, you know, I'm very disturbed. I'm not able to come over this. You know, as a Balvika's teacher, I'm supposed to teach the children, you know, how to cope with events like this. But I'm not able to. I'm constantly questioning Swami, that Swami, why did you take away this child? So I was telling her, and I'm saying I was telling within quotes, probably this is what Swami wanted to tell her and tell me, right? Because it's a situation that's simulated in our own mind too. So I was telling her, see, it's a typical situation. Swami has sent a child to you and given you the role to play that mentor for that child, right? You are supposed to be a teacher in that Balvika's class. You are supposed to be a mother for that child in that Balvika's class, right? But along with that, you are conscious of this idea that this is Swami's child and I am doing Swami's duty. You are supposed to have that detachment. You are supposed to have that feeling that Nimitta Matram, as Swami says.
Correct.
This is Swami's child. Will you go and fight with those parents of the child that how can you take away the child at the end of the Balvika's class? You know that this is not my child. It's the parents' child. They've come, left the child with me. At the end of the class, the child is going to be taken away. So you are completely aware of the idea.
And you're okay with it.
You're okay with it, right? And what you're supposed to do is, this attitude, you're supposed to transfer to your house.
Yes.
You're supposed
everything in our life.
You're supposed to look at your own child and say that this is Swami's child. He has left this child in my house. And any day he is ready to take this child away from my house. But what we are doing is the other way around, right? The same attachment that we have for, as Swami would say, Kama Putras, we are transferring it on to our Prema Putras. And this is precisely what we should not do.
In fact, one of our professors, right, we know about him only too well, Professor Bhagya sir.
Mm-hmm.
He has a daughter who suffers from diabetes, chronic diabetes, right from her birth. She has a type A diabetes. And Swami, in one of his very first interactions with him, had told, this daughter is my gift to you. I can take this gift back anytime I want. And he said that those words of Swami gave him so much clarity about how he was supposed to handle her in every Deshakala Paristhiti. You know, anything that happened to her, however serious it was, he kept telling himself this constantly. Swami, it's your gift. Right? So if we are able to live in that, that's a beautiful point, to live with the feeling of trusteeship. That even every moment which has been given to me, every second of time, is a gift that Swami has given. And let me best utilize it, you know, in a manner that, because he's taking away that time, he's pulling that rope all the time, you know, and it's going to get over. So how can I utilize that? So I think one of the best formulas to kind of apply into our life is this trusteeship model. Everything that we have, our name, fame, relationships, all our assets, we are only custodians of that as long as we are meant to.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's why what Shankara says, Ma Kuru Dhanajana Yavana Garvam Harati Nimeshat Kala Sarvam. And Swami, when he would repeat this, he would kind of Harati Nimeshat in a second, Nimsham. Nimsham means a second. You know, Harati, the whole thing can be taken away from you in a second. So therefore, don't have any, you know, kind of... I think Swami would, and even Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, you know, he would give this beautiful example of the maid servant working in a house. The maid servant comes early in the morning. She comes, you know, cleans up the whole place, looks after everything at home, does all the vessels, the washing, the cleaning and everything. She is constantly focused on her work. However, knowing fully well that she has her own home, which she needs to go back to. If that is the kind of bhavana, that the kind of feeling that we can have in this world, that whatever I'm doing in any Deshakala Paristhiti, I am only doing it, however, I have a house that I need to return back to. No, this Chalaman, Apne Ghar, the beautiful song, Apne Dham, that there is my original home that is waiting for me, and everything in this world I am doing, I will do it with all diligence. Only fully well knowing that, Swami gives the example of a principal of a school, right? While he or she is the principal of the school, from every child to every desk to every chalk piece is her responsibility, his or her responsibility. And yet one day when the principal retires, he or she goes home fully knowing that nothing belongs to me. You know, for 10 years, 20 years. And I completely, resonate with this feeling. I remember when a couple of directors of our own institute, Professor U.S. Rao sir, when he retired, he made this mention. He says, all along, he was held responsible for everything that happened in the Prashanthi Nilayam campus. So much so that Swami would, come and tell him off if the chappals were not arranged properly. When Swami would sometimes surprise visit, or Swami would tell the vice chancellor, go and see whether the chappals were arranged properly, and then he would haul up the director. And Rao sir sometimes in his moments of frustration would say, I am the principal of the college. Is this my duty to see? But Swami expects me to see whether the chappals are arranged. And yet the day he retired, he said, I'm going to miss this. No, he continued to work, but knowing fully well that now that is not my responsibility. That is now somebody else's responsibility. So it's, I think if we are able to have that kind of an attitude in everything and in every person that who comes into our life, I think that's a good utilization of time. What would you say?
Absolutely. I think that's the attitude that we are talking about. When Swami says you are timeless, when Swami says that in reality you're beyond time and space, that is where we belong.
Yep.
Right?
That's our original
home. Having that in mind, we are also aware that we are put in this deshakala paristhiti. We've been put here. You could blame it on your karma, you can blame it on your destiny. But whatever it is by the mechanism of God that you've been put here. Having put here to completely, at every moment, if you're able to define that best use of that time by saying, this is the deshakala paristhiti, this is what has to be done. I think that is probably the first way to start off by saying, what's the best use of time, right? And every stage that is, there is what defines that stage and what is the best thing to be done at that time. Right? I mean, you were telling about your interview where Swami was mentioning that. I think that was really profound.
Yeah, right? Because when I was in 8th class, Swami was telling, he was kind of telling me off for something. That usually used to be what my interaction with Swami would always be. Swami, kind of telling me off for something. So he was saying, in your life here, right now, you should have only two S, Swami and study. Study, Swami. Swami, study. Obviously, I was not kind of
mature enough.
And I was not hitting those levels that Swami wanted me to be, expected of me. I continue to kind of remind myself of that. Of that formula, that Swami and study, those are the two important things. So Deshakala, as a student, study and Swami. Possibly once you finish your formal education and you go into life, I think there's the one thing that remains constant is the Swami, who remains constant in everything that we do.
Absolutely. I think that is, Swami saying, Anusmarana Yudhyacha. Literally.
Mamanusmara Yudhyacha.
He's saying that what needs to be done in that stage of life is one current, and this constant current of that Swami, right? That's why that work is worship, what we were saying.
Yes.
That keeping that in mind, what has to be done, right? At every stage, what is that thing that needs to be done? I found this definition of duty very beautiful. What you're due to do at that point in time is your duty, right? As a mother.
Due to do.
Right? What you're due to do as a mother, what you're due to do as a student, what you're due to do as a father.
Yeah.
That becomes your duty, right? So at every stage, but that the other analogy when you're talking about a mother working in a house or a maid working in a house, Swami would say is a mother who has a cradle, who has a baby who is sleeping in the cradle.
Yeah,
she goes around doing all the work in the house, but one part of the mind is always on the child. Right?
Correct.
So Swami says, you should be like that. one part of your mind should be always on the goal, Lord Swami.
And I think these examples, like a lot of people, right? I think this is one of the standard questions that we used to have when we were small. And even now also, a lot of youth say, but brother, that's not really possible. Like, you know, when you're working, you're having some really important deadline, or you have a horrible boss, or you have a horrible company. Very difficult to, in that moment, to think of Swami. And I think these examples make it that much more obvious that yes, it can be done, right? Possibly even without training, like as you just now mentioned, what training does the mother have, you know, in constantly thinking about the baby,
right,
while doing all other activity? Did she attend some Vedanta classes, or did she, you know, go through some summer courses or something like that? No.
Or even a corporate training.
Or corporate training, no.
How to take up different activities.
So, it is all about, you know, what you give importance, that, you know, the priority. What is the priority at that moment in life? That comes, I think, automatically, and that is what we have to keep telling ourselves. I mean, all these examples that we spoke about, these are real life today, direct examples. We actually go through it,
right?
I'm reminded of one more formula that Swami had given when somebody had asked Swami in the Trai, Swami, what sadhana should the boys do? Or the students, you know, should they do? And Swami's very simple formula was play while playing, eat while eating, study while studying, and pray while praying, right? Which is, it's all about doing that to the best of your ability at that moment. Unfortunately, I mean, as simple as that formula may sound, when we actually, you know, kind of look at our own life, that's exactly what we don't do. You know, how many times while eating we are doing something else? You know, and Swami has spoken at length about while eating, watching TV or discussing something negative. You know, we do all of that. We don't eat while we are eating. Okay, we usually these days with our phones, you know, our eyes are on that screen. We don't even know what we're eating sometimes. You know, we mix the wrong things and eat. Right? Eat while eating. Study while studying. So when you're working, work. There's nothing wrong. You don't have to, you know, keep doing namasmarana like Om Sai Ram, Om Sai Ram, Om Sai Ram. You may wonder, how can I do that and do namasmarana? No, Swami's never said that. I think that is utilized well in, like, that is taught to us in our hostel. Just before you start and after you end that activity, if you remember, you know, after finishing the activity, offer it to Swami. Before you start the activity, once again, you know, pray to Swami to give you the strength to do that. That's good enough. That's a good enough formula. You know?
I think that probably should be the basis of how we define this best use of time.
Yeah.
You know, if you really look at it like, you know, a woodcutter chopping down a tree, he should either be chopping the tree or he should be sharpening the axe.
Correct.
Right? So I think that defines either you are looking at Desha Kala Paristhiti and doing your duty, or you're doing something that enables you to do that duty better.
Duty properly, yeah. Right? That's nice, yeah.
You should be, and what is required for you, I mean, the simple thing of do something while you're doing that. I mean, that's the Zen way of life, right? As they say, you know, I heard the birds sing. And that's supposed to be a Zen quote.
Yeah.
Because we never hear the birds sing, you know, it's just going above. So that calls for a certain mental state. You need a certain kind of purity of mind, control over the mind. And that is what sadhana is all about.
Yes.
Right? So the best utilization of time is either you're doing what has to be done, defined by Desha Kala Paristhiti, or you're sharpening the axe. You are doing what it takes for you to be able to do that.
Do that, yes.
Right? And in the manner, as you said, spiritualizing that whole process. So I think that is what we will take up maybe the next time when we meet. I hope Mike can join us next week too, because this is the framework of you know, what we are trying to discuss. But we'll try to probably break it down and get more examples of what Swami says. There are challenges in this. There is no blueprint which can be printed out and shared with everyone, and everyone follows it, right?
I think you have to create a blueprint for yourself.
For yourself, right.
Because once again, Desha Kala Paristhiti are different.
Exactly.
You know, oftentimes, a lot of brothers, they say, in the position that in which we are, we can't do exactly what you do. For example, if somebody is having a doctor's duty, 36-hour duty in the office, in the hospital, obviously you're not expected that person to do Omkaram Suprabhatam. In the morning, they're probably coming back at that time.
Mm.
We are not talking about that one size fits all.
Right.
But having said that, you must create something which fits you, rather than saying that, oh, anyway, this doesn't work for me.
You have to take control of your life.
Yes.
Right? It is not a life led by Deshakala Paristhiti. And I think that's the
catch.
That's the catch. That probably would be like an animal existence.
Yes. You live by instinct.
You live by instinct. It is not that, but at the same time, it is not not letting those define your life.
Yes.
It's about taking control of life, literally, right? Because all spiritual living is nothing but conscious living.
Yeah.
You really think what you speak, you really see what you're doing, and you analyze whether that is what has to be done, right?
Are we going to play that Chinnakatha now, or?
No, I think we'll reserve it for the next time, because wow, that kind of defines everything.
Yes, right? So I'm sure, dear listeners, right, this one beautiful Chinnakatha. I mean, this can be like a curtain raiser, and this can be an advertisement for the next week's satsang, because there's a beautiful story that Swami explains,
right,
and I think just analyzing that story itself will give us all the answers that we need for this topic, which is don't waste time.
Thank you, dear listeners, for being with us. And thank you for considering it a valuable use of your time to tune in and listen to us, right? Or you're listening to it after downloading. We do hope that we have contributed to what you thought was good use of time. We'll meet you again next week. We'll resume this topic. As you said, we have that beautiful Chinnakatha, which we will also play out. Till we meet you all next time, do take care. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
सीता राम नाम भजो
Sai Naam Bhajo
Sitara